This is an iHeart podcast.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joe Biden is a national security threat. We have some insane things happening with the administrative state. What is going on with the Clinton lawyer Sussman trial? All that's coming up on I'm Right. Welcome to I'm Right. It's time to talk about some foreign policy. People matter. Just hold on a second. I'm actually not doing that. It's a children of the future type thing right now. I'm talking about people, person-to-person interactions, how people interpret things. It's really, really important. And I know what you're saying right now, but Jesse, I get all that. This is a no-brainer. Why are you even bringing this up? Well, Joe Biden just got back from Korea and Japan. He had to go do the whole Asian trip where he goes and explains why our tanking economy is doing really, really well, you know, things like that. And Joe Biden once again tripped up. Before I play it though, Joe Biden tripped up in a major way, and he's done this before when it comes to national security. So what I was just saying though, remember this, people matter. Meaning when we think of our enemies and our friends, we think of them sometimes as if they're just an entity or a robot. Like if I was to say China to you, you would say, oh, China's our enemy, right? Except you have to understand the leadership of China, they're people. They watch TV just like you watch TV. They're on social media too. They know what's going on. When the president of the United States of America says things, they're people. They are going to interpret the things he says and then act accordingly based on the things the president of the United States of America says. Not just what comes out of his mouth, how's he look, how's he sound. They're always trying to lick their finger and stick it in the air and figure out how strong is America. Do they mean what they say? What will they do here? What won't they do there? Did America go too far and offend me? People. Your enemies are people. So when Joe Biden goes overseas and has a little brain fart like this, it's not a small deal. It might be the biggest deal in the world.
Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are?
That's a commitment we made. We are not. Look, here's the situation. We agree with the one China policy. We signed on to it. And all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that it can be taken by force, is just not appropriate. It'll dislocate the entire region and be another action similar to what happened in Ukraine. And so it's a burden that is even stronger.
What? Did Joe Biden just commit to World War III over Taiwan? Because that's what he did. And it's important, before we go off about Biden, it's important to understand the leadership, the people, the men leading China, they were watching that TV too. They got notified of that. If they weren't watching it live, they got notified of that about 5 seconds after that bumbling fool said it. He said, what? No, give me the video. Of course, they're speaking Mandarin, but you know, it probably sounds that way in English. But it matters a lot. That's World War III. China invades Taiwan. We're going to send a carrier group over there with a couple of Marine regiments. Is that the plan, Joe? Start lobbing nukes at each other? Is that the plan? And of course, you know, the White House had to come out and started walking it back right away. Wow, well, no, that's not really what he meant. It's not, he didn't really mean that. But remember, this is not the first time he said that. Remember this back in October?
that we are not going to step back. We are not going to change any of our views.
So are you saying that the United States would come to Taiwan's defense if China attacked?
Yes, we have a commitment to do that.
They can keep walking these things back. He continues to do these things and they walk these things back. But the truth of the matter is this. When Joe Biden speaks, because he is the commander-in-chief, the entire world can change by his words. Now, that's insane, right? That's an insane amount of power. You don't have that power. I don't have that power. I say a sentence on here and it can move the world, change the world, destroy the world. Joe Biden does have that power. Do I have to remind you we're like 15 minutes removed from Joe Biden getting up on television and being asked about Russia potentially invading Ukraine, and Joe Biden said, well, I mean, if it's a small little incursion, it's not that big of a deal. And then immediately the White House tried to walk it back, but in came Russia right off the bat. Again, Vladimir Putin has television too. And this brings me to my point. It goes way beyond left, right, Republican, Democrat. We have to have a fully functional adult leading the United States of America. With all due respect, whatever your job is, look, let's make it about me. Let's make it about my job. With all due respect, and I love what I do here at The First. I love bringing you TV every night, and I love just having these conversations with you. But if someone was to sit in this chair and they were addled with dementia, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It might not be the best TV, or maybe it would be the best TV, but it wouldn't be the end of the world. It doesn't have the potential to change the world, to start a nuclear war. Not a big deal. Same with your job. Accountant, lawyer, housewife, whatever you do. Someone in your job gets dementia, it's a big deal. I'm not downplaying it, but it doesn't change the world. Someone with dementia as president of the United States of America has the potential to change or end the world. It is a very big deal. These things that he continues to say accidentally are not small things. And you can tell, like right in that moment, you can tell the second he goes off script, he's looking around, kind of wandering around and just kind of saying whatever happens to come out of his mind at the moment. And he doesn't have that filter anymore. And again, if that's you or your grandma, it hurts and it sucks and it's awful. I'm not dismissing it, but it's not the end of the world. Joe Biden saying it might be. Which brings me to one last point on all this stuff, our military. I mean, we have a president out there doing a lot of saber rattling at the moment, a lot of it, sending billions in arms to Ukraine, providing intelligence that's getting Russian generals killed, threatening Taiwan with war, or threatening China with war if they invade Taiwan. So let's check in on the military. Well, the soft purge continues. Remember, I've been warning for a long time about the soft purge of the military. Understand that communists purging the military of their political enemies is standard communism. That's communism 101. It's one of the first things they do every single time. They get rid of all their political enemies. Why? Well, again, the communist doesn't look at the military as something that really has to defend the nation. They look at the military as a tool to kill their political opponents. They always have. And our communists here are no different. Well, how are you supposed to do that in America? This isn't the Soviet Union under Stalin where you could just haul a general off in the middle of the night and have him shot in the face. No, you have to go about it a different way. So what they're doing is what's called a soft purge. It's what I call it. They're creating an environment where the real thinking, super stud, type A men who win wars, they don't want to be in that environment anymore. That's one part of the soft purge. The second part is that 17-year-old boy wants to go see what he's made of, serve his country. He's on the football team. He doesn't want to join for this insanity. He's going to go do something else, and we'll never get him at all. That's the soft purge. Right now, there's a proposal that the U.S. Army will allow soldiers to switch their duty station, to move bases if the area they're in doesn't affirm things like their gender of choice. So we right now in the United States military are getting ready to tell a man who's decided he's a woman and wants to move out of Texas to be located in Connecticut, we're about to tell him, okay, Pat, that's fine. again, the type A men, the thinking, freedom-fighting studs we need to stay in to fight. They wake up in the morning and they see headlines like this and they say, man, I'm gone. I'm not re-enlisted. I'm not staying in here for this. I'm gone. And again, that 16, 17-year-old Iowa farm boy on the wrestling team who's grown up wanting to be like dad. At that picture of his dad in Vietnam, uniform on, and he says, man, I wanna be like dad. That's what I wanna do. He wakes up this morning, he has social media too, and he sees, what, the trans military? I think I'll just go to college. Never mind. It's happening right now across the country. It's happening right now, the rot in our military. And like I just said, there's a reason they want the military purged of their ideological opponents. It's so they can turn their guns on the American citizens who oppose them. I mean, look, the National School Board Association just tried to sick the National Guard and military police on who? Concerned parents. Quote, we asked the Army National Guard and its military police be deployed to certain school districts and in related events where students and school personnel have been subjected to acts and threats of violence. That's exactly right. They wanted the military to come arrest you. Why? Because you didn't want your child to be taught by this thing.
So today was full of little happy gender euphoria moments. I got called Mr. Micah a lot today. Well, completely femme. And that was really heartwarming that the kids just got it. But my favorite reaction, and it sums me up so well, I feel like, is I was in a new classroom and I took off my mask to blow my nose and I just hear a kid loudly whisper, oh, she's a boy. I was like, yeah, you got it, kid. You totally got it.
They're trying to get your kid to change genders in your school. They're trying to do this behind your back. And if you get upset about it, they want to send the National Guard in after you. When I tell you we're dealing with vicious, vile communists, you better understand I'm being serious. And look, let's finish this with some good news. Over 1.2 million students have been yanked out of public schools. 1.2 million in just the past 2 years. That's the best news I've heard in a long time. Get your kids out of these government education camps. All right, all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We got Congressman Mike Johnson. He's been all over the place talking about the weaponization of the administrative state against parents. We're gonna talk to him about that. What can they do about that? That's coming up in a second. Before we get to that, I understand if you have any money in the stock market, I understand that it's been a rough couple months, right? I get these texts every day from my sister. Did you see what happened? I know. I know this. The guys I know who make a bunch of money in the stock market, I'm not one of them, but the guys I know, and that's kind of what they do, they always tell me, hey, zig whenever the public zags. Right now you're taking a beating and you're thinking I have to tuck tail and run. May I suggest you do something different? Go to 2022stockmarketwatch.com. Mark Chaikin is on there. He's the one who predicted the crash of 2020. And he thinks there's a gigantic opportunity right now. Not to cut and run, for you to make money. 2022stockmarketmessage.com. Check it out, all right? We'll be back.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
So abortion should be allowed then, by your definition, for any reason, for any purpose, at any stage, right?
I trust people to make decisions about their body, and then when relevant, I think that they need to consult their medical practitioners.
Okay.
And not Congress.
If it is, listen, let me just ask you this question. If it is not lawful and morally acceptable to take the life of a 10-year-old child, I assume you agree with that, right? That would be wrong, correct?
I believe that.
Okay.
That is
and
wrong.
A 2-year-old child, same thing. That would be murder. We would all agree that's wrong. Then what is the principal distinction between the human being that is 2 years old or 9 months old or 1 week old or an hour old than one that is 8 inches further up the birth canal in the utero? What's the difference? Why is it okay in the latter case and not the former cases?
I trust people to determine what to do with their own bodies.
Wow.
Full stop.
Joining me now, the congressman from Louisiana, Mike Johnson, who destroyed that young lady, deservedly so, in front of that hearing. Congressman, the pause at the end from her was so incredibly telling as you walked her into just having to admit she's fine with killing unborn babies. I mean, that's where they're at now. They're fairly open about it now. They believe an unborn child, even one that's getting ready to pop on out, can be killed and should be killed.
That's where they are. And this moment gives us all an opportunity to point out the utter moral bankruptcy of the left's position on abortion. You know, for a while, the debate has sort of been dormant, Jesse, because, you know, we've been struggling over defending the sanctity of human life my whole career. Many of us have been in this battle a long time. But now the Dobbs opinion sort of teased this up for a really thoughtful public conversation. And what's ironic about this, Jesse, and you pointed it out, is that the House Judiciary Committee, which has jurisdiction over our federal court system, by the way, the brazen attempt by the Democrats to use a hearing of the House Judiciary Committee to try to pressure the conservative justices to change their mind on the opinion before it comes out, it just backfired on them pretty fantastically, and we were grateful to have those moments.
It did, and I'll tell you, I hate to be too sunny and too optimistic, but the insanity and depravity of these people is, I think, our finest weapon at this point in time. Now, obviously, that was a great line of questioning, and I applaud you for it, but it was really the insanity of that person that won the day for us. People look at that who aren't near as pro-life as I am or pro-life as you are. They look at that, and no matter which way you slice it, that person looks like a monster, and you look like a reasonable person. This is a culture win for us, these kinds of things.
Well, it is. And as John Adams said, facts are stubborn things. We have the opportunity to point out the facts, and we don't have to do it in a way that is overly offensive or, you know, we're not trying to beat anyone over the head with these facts. We just lay them out plainly, and people can draw their own objective conclusions from that. And they have nowhere to run, Jesse. That's the point. There is no way to defend that position. We have advancements in medical technology. We have a lot more insight now than they had in 1973 when Roe became the law of the land. Everyone can look at an ultrasound and see this is plainly and clearly a human being. And so they are left then to try to defend destroying that life. And as much as they try to hide from it and run from it, we'll have more and more opportunities, I believe, to point this out and let people see this for themselves.
Yeah, I agree. I tell the story a lot. I had a friend of mine, his mother was the most pro-abortion woman ever, and now she's hardcore pro-life, and she didn't have a religious conversion. She went to a museum and saw a baby in its mother's womb, and it hit her over the face. Wow, that's a human being, and she switched. Anyway, I have often said that I think the most dangerous thing, we have a bunch of problems obviously going on in the country, but the most dangerous thing happening is the weaponization of the administrative state against the political enemies of the Democratic Party. And you and Jim Jordan released a memo and dozens of instances where the DOJ started labeling terrorist threat tags onto concerned parents. We now have a Department of Justice and FBI going after parents who don't want their kids to learn how to chop their penis off in kindergarten. Do I have that right, Congressman?
That's one of the ways to put it, yes. I mean, that's exactly what's happened. As you noted, the Democrat Party has weaponized the Department of Justice. This is so dangerous for so many reasons, but it undermines the people's faith in our institutions. This one's particularly important. To maintain a constitutional republic, people have to believe in the system of justice, but they have weaponized this agency. And so now you have the leader of the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, the highest ranking law enforcement law official in our nation, who has, I believe he lied to Congress, Jesse, because he appeared before us in October. We asked him specifically about this question, and he said under oath that parents who showed up at school boards to protest mass mandates and CRT curricula and the rest were not labeled as domestic terrorists by the FBI. We know that was not a factual statement. He knew it at the time he made it, because we have a whistleblower who's come forward now. This is explosive information, and we are not going to let this go.
Congressman, they're not losing trust in their institutions. They've lost it. And these institutions have to have massive reforms of themselves or be eliminated entirely. But in the very least, they have to have massive reforms in order to get that back. And they don't seem to have any interest in going that way. They just seem to continue to lecture us more and punish us more and aim their guns at us more instead of reforming themselves. And I look, you're the congressman. I'm just a TV host. Is there a way they can earn that trust back? Because I can't see how that happens in reality.
Well, I think, it, as you noted, it has to be preceded by some real reform. I think you need a structural change from the top. The FBI, for example, has had some horribly corrupt officials drawn into the public's attention over the last few years because they've weaponized that. They've used the Department of Justice. Imagine it. The Department of Justice as a political arm of the National Democrat Party. It is just unconscionable. So we have to go in, committees of jurisdiction, the committees that have oversight over this, to fix it for them. Because as you know, there doesn't appear to be any appetite for changing it internally. I think you're going to see some of that. When we have this big, massive red wave election and Republicans take over again, we're having a lot of thoughtful discussion behind the scenes on how we can reform the FBI, reform the Department of Justice to make it work for the people again, where they can have trust in it. Because, Jesse, look, this is not a game. If people do not trust in a system of justice that is blind, we have equal justice under law, we have nothing. We don't have the rule of law in this country, and that is a very dangerous outcome.
Congressman, I'm not asking you to name names. I wouldn't do that to you. I understand you're going to be with the public on this fear of the administrative state, but can you at least reassure us that the GOP leadership in the House, most of them, they're right there with the hardcore freedom fighters like yourself and realizing this is a big problem? Because I'm a little bit sick of hearing about the great men and women of the FBI at the head of our party. We have to reform ourselves. And if that's the line, then we're not going to change anything.
No, that's true. I mean, we want to be careful because I believe rank and file officers in the FBI, I know many of them. They're patriots. They serve their country. Oh, they got in it, and they're in it for the right reason. We're talking about the leadership of these agencies, that it's corrupt at the top. And that's part of the swamp that Donald Trump talks about. I mean, we have to dig in and correct that so that we can do a service to all those that are further down the chain. I mean, that's the obvious thing. I do believe that there is a groundswell of support amongst the Republicans in the House. I think we're unified on this. In our committee, Jim Jordan will be the ranking member. He'll be the chairman of House Judiciary. I'm on that committee. Other freedom fighters that you know, lots of our friends are there, and we are fiercely committed in digging in on this. I'm the vice chairman of the House Republicans now. I'm telling you, this will be a priority of ours. We're going to get this straight because we owe it to the American people. And again, we have to do it to preserve our system of justice.
Outstanding. I love hearing that. Congressman, thank you so much for what you're doing. Please keep going.
Thank you, buddy. You too.
All right. We've talked about a corrupt system a lot, a corrupt administrative state. Well, I know you probably haven't seen it on the television, but there is an actual trial going on right now that is exposing a lot of this, and we're going to give you an update on that with an expert next. Before we get to that, let's talk about the health of your family. When I talk about Eden Pure Thunderstorm, to be honest, sometimes I just hit the fluffy parts I love. I love the fact that every room I walk into with one smells clean at all times. Dog's bed right there, doesn't matter. Eden Pure cleans it all. I have people who put it over their cat's litter box and they can no longer smell the litter box. And I love that, right? And I love the allergy relief. I love that. Eden Pure Thunderstorm kills viruses and mold. You're making your family healthier when you put these in your home. They have a 3-pack for sale for my viewers. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the code Jesse, and that gets you 3 of these for under $200. Go make your home smell better. Fix your allergies. Make your family healthier. We'll be back.
When the President of the United States, who has taken an oath to protect and defend the Constitution, and by that, defend the American people and their interests, uses his position to, in effect, extort a foreign government for his own political purposes, I think that is very much what the founders worried about in high crimes and misdemeanors.
She's very worried about that government corruption. Joining me now, Margo Cleveland. She's the senior legal correspondent with the Federalist. Margo, first and foremost, a lot of people are hearing a lot of names right now, and because we have a disgusting, wretched media in this country, they don't understand who these people are. They're hearing words like Sussman and Durham, and they don't understand what's happening. So can you act like I just showed up here from Mars? Who are these people? What's happening right now?
Sure. So Durham is the special counsel who was appointed to investigate the investigators. So we had 5 years of Trump being the bad guy, and we had special counsel Robert Mueller looking into what he did and, of course, found nothing. And in the process, we came up with evidence that it was actually the FBI and the DOJ who were kind of pulling things. And we saw that first when they went to get a warrant on someone who was volunteering to help the Trump campaign named Carter Page. As this material started to come out, what happened was Attorney General Barr, William Barr, under President Trump, appointed John Durham to start with the investigation. And then he appointed him as a special counsel at the end. So far, John Durham, special counsel, has been digging into what has been going on. So it's probably about 4 years now. It is so complicated and so messy. We're just starting to get some trials out of it. So Michael Sussman is on trial now in a federal court in Washington, D.C. Michael Sussman had been an attorney for the firm of Perkins Coie, and he represented the DNC originally when they were hacked. But he also then started helping the Clinton campaign during the 2016 election. And what happened is he had a client named Rodney Jaffe, who was a tech executive connected to a lot of different tech companies. Jaffe and some other tech experts put together this theory that Donald Trump was communicating with Russia through Alpha Bank, which was a Russian bank. And Rodney Jaffe took this to Michael Sussman, who's now on trial, and said, hey, look at this. Michael Sussman then went to Mark Elias, who was another partner who was the head of the Clinton campaign's legal work. And together, they then worked with Fusion GPS, which was this private investigative firm. So again, it's a mess. There's all these players. But what they did is they did a two-pronged attack. They took this Alpha Bank hoax, which it is. It was saying, oh yeah, there's a secret communication network using something called Trump.com or some kind of Trump connection. And they're communicating with Alpha Bank. They took that to the media. And Michael Sussman texted his buddy, James Baker, who was then the general counsel for the FBI. So we're talking really high up in the FBI. Michael Sussman texted him and said, hey, I've got some sensitive information that is time sensitive. Can you meet with me? James Baker said, yeah, absolutely. He meets with, oh, the text also said, I'm bringing this on my own behalf, not on behalf of a client. James Baker said, sure, and meets with Michael Sussman the next day, who in the introductory comments said, look, this is on my own behalf. I want the FBI to know this. This is going to hit the media. And then he hands over 2 thumb drives and I think 3 kind of academic papers saying, look at this data. It shows that Trump's communicating with the Alpha Bank, the Russia bank. Baker then takes this to one of the heads in the FBI, and then they start this investigation, which just happens to correspond with it coming out in the media. And what do you have? You have Hillary Clinton retweeting the article talking about Alpha Bank and Trump and pushing again this Russia collusion hoax. So that is kind of the details. But if you're like most people, you're like, okay, wait, there's so many players. I don't get. What's the bottom line? Hillary Clinton authorized this. We got this in the Michael Sussman trial. She authorized this to be leaked to the media. She knew that this was not something that's been confirmed. And the people behind the scenes, Rodney Jaffe, knew it wasn't solid. They were coming up with ways to make it sound good. So why is Michael Sussman on trial? He's on trial for lying to James Baker when he took him this data and said, look, I'm coming here on my own. I'm not doing this for a client. When in fact, the evidence indicates he was there both for the Clinton campaign and for Rodney Jaffe.
Man, what a tangled web. And that was so good at laying that out for everybody, Margo. One, I applaud you for that, too. Who the heck is Robbie Mook?
Ah, so he was the Clinton campaign manager during 2016. And he actually holds the responsibility for launching the Russia collusion hoax. During the eve, and this is something that's really important to put this into perspective, right before the Hillary Clinton was nominated as the official Democratic candidate, there was a dump of emails from the DNC. Someone had hacked into it. They believe it was the Russians and released all these emails. Those emails show that the DNC, who was supposed to be impartial, was trying to sabotage Bernie Sanders and help Hillary Clinton. So what happened is we're about ready to nominate, the Democrats are about ready to nominate Hillary Clinton, and all the media is focusing on the fact that they were sabotaging Bernie Sanders. So what does Robbie Mook do? He's the head of the Clinton campaign, so he's the campaign manager. He goes on CNN and says, this is Russia. They hacked the emails, they released them to help Donald Trump. That actually launched the Russia collusion hoax. From there, we have dribble after dribble of, oh, there's Carter Page. Oh, there's George Papadopoulos. Oh, there's this investigation through the FISA court. So Robbie Mook actually was the one who launched it. But because he was so embedded, he was high up in the Clinton campaign, he has knowledge of how much Hillary Clinton knew. And he testified at the Sussman trial and said she actually gave the green light. So Hillary Clinton, who you played that clip of what the founding fathers, you know, were concerned with, Hillary Clinton pushed in the media. She okayed the media running this hoax. She paid for it. And she okayed this going to the media and pushing it. And what's important here to recognize is it wasn't just this Alpha Bank. It was the entire Russia collusion. If she okayed Alpha Bank, you know that she okayed pushing Christopher Steele's intel. You know she okayed all of this.
Margo Cleveland, she writes at The Federalist. I don't think I have to tell you to go read all of her stuff. Thank you so much, ma'am. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Jesse. Take care.
How about that for a tangled, slimy web of corruption, huh? That almost sounded like journalism out of Margo. I don't know. I've never seen it before. All right, we're going to talk about Joe and stepping on all of us with his idiotic China-Taiwan comments. Before we get to that, let's get to this real quick. I know you're worried about grocery prices, and I can't help you out with most of them, but I can help you out with meat. Your beef, your chicken, your seafood needs, goodranchers.com/Jesse. When you go there, here's what you're going to find. An American company that only sells the highest quality American meat. Again, these are patriots, but you're going to find something else. When you subscribe to Good Ranchers, your meat prices are locked in. Locked in. We know more inflation's coming. No one's even pretending otherwise. Maybe hyperinflation. We don't know. For you, your meat prices stay the same. GoodRanchers.com/Jesse. Oh, and as an added bonus, for the lifetime of your subscription, you get $25 off every box. And on a personal note, may I recommend the marinated chicken? Just trust me on that. I would grab a few marinated chickens. You won't ever look back. All right, we'll be back.
Mr. President, is the policy of strategic ambiguity towards Taiwan dead? No. Could you explain?
No.
Mr. President, would you send troops to Taiwan if China
invaded? Our policy has not changed at all. I stated that when I made...
Okay, well, now I'm even more confused than Joe. Joining me now as an expert on matters like this, Stephen Yates, former White House Deputy National Security Advisor. So, Stephen, could you tell me first and foremost, what is the official American policy when it comes to Taiwan, especially when it comes to Taiwan and China? Do we have one?
Well, Jesse, the official policy usually is what the President of the United States says it is. That's kind of the constitutional role of the President of the United States. It's only kind of in China policy where we allow academics and bureaucrats to hijack the whole thing, and then they turn around and tell the president what our policy supposedly is. They did this to George W. Bush when he said in 2001, we'll do whatever it takes to defend Taiwan. And they said, nope, we didn't change the China policy or Taiwan policy. And this time, Joe Biden accidentally said the truth three times, and his staff three times have walked it back, making it a perfect muddle. But the official line is that we are supposed to help Taiwan avoid being attacked by the mean commies, but we don't recognize their legitimate sovereignty because they're a free and democratic people. So go figure. Doesn't sound very American to me.
It doesn't. And I guess, I mean, I'm probably asking you to predict a future that you can't predict, but officially, I mean, China's doing a lot of saber-rattling, surprise, surprise, but officially, if China starts landing a bunch of Chinese Marines on the shores of Taiwan, are we going to war?
Well, in essence, I think we will. But I don't think that we'll be the first in. The biggest change in Asia in recent years is that our ally Japan has recognized when they saw the Afghanistan debacle, when they saw NATO fail to deter Vladimir Putin, they realized that they're going to have to take up some of these issues themselves. And Japan has a long, deep historical tie to Taiwan, and so do the people of Taiwan to them. And I strongly suspect that Japan will be more forward-leaning. And in fact, the Japanese government has more or less discarded this strategic ambiguity and said, if China attacks, the world can't afford to just let it fall. And they recognize the business reality of 90% of the world's magic chips that run the smart devices of our lives are manufactured out of Taiwan. And so we have to protect that territory, not just morally and strategically, but economically.
Okay, what about Korea? Obviously, South Korea is a friend to us. Do they have some kind of stance on all this?
Well, South Korea was one of the longest allies of Taipei. They officially switched their recognition from Taipei to Beijing in the early 1990s. But since then, South Korea has kind of gone its own way. It focuses an awful lot about its neighbor to the north, which one might understand. And so in recent years, they've been less involved when it comes to the Taiwan contingencies. Japan leads the way in Asia. Australia sometimes pitches in. India is not aligned, but has made good friends with the right people around China's periphery. So I think there is a soft infrastructure that could do some good things to help Taiwan stay free. But if we have a president that is fumbling over his own words and sending mixed messages and bad signals out there, it's the worst of all possible outcomes.
Stephen, I know it's kind of a nerd question, but I think it probably matters. What is Japan's military capability? I obviously know they were restricted quite a bit post-World War II for obvious reasons. Where are they now?
Well, they're very, very advanced and sophisticated, but they live in a world of euphemisms where they have an exceedingly robust Coast Guard that other people might call a Navy. But because of the funny existence we've imposed on them all these many years, they have this domestic civil defense force. Same goes with other kinds of air and power. They're in space and they have assets. They're a very substantial economy. technological power and military power if we allow them to go their own way. I think they're prepared to do that. I think that would be good for the alliance. I think it would be good for Japan. It would be bad for China. And so I say, let Japan be a normal nation as being one of the best down payments on restoring deterrence in East Asia.
Okay, and I have to ask the same question about Taiwan. I'm sorry, I like to try to game these things out of my head. I obviously know China could take Taiwan. Could Taiwan make them feel it in the process?
They could, and I would say that China can destroy Taiwan. I think China would have a hard time taking, holding, and occupying Taiwan. And so really what we saw with resistance in Ukraine, you'd see a lot of the same out of Taiwan. The United States should get out of its own way and let Taiwan buy defense articles that would inflict great pain on China should they try to attack. We've allowed the establishment to try to have this ambiguous policy on the notion that we don't want to pick a fight. But if the Chinese are picking the fight, I think that Americans would rather not send our troops, but let the Taiwanese have the best possible shot at defending themselves and make themselves something that's very, very bitter for China to try to swallow.
All right, I know we're kind of gaming this out in our heads here and putting ourselves in the minds of others, and that's difficult to do, but what if China isn't necessarily serious about taking Taiwan? I'm not naive. I know they want it, and I get all that, but what if this saber-rattling has another purpose? What purpose would that serve? What would that be?
Well, I think that's an exceedingly rational line of thought, and it's the most likely scenario going out in the near term. It is a way of sort of saying that the emperor has no clothes, exposing the United States for being a feckless, weak, confused, bumbling power, and to try to assert themselves as the rising big dog on the block. And if you want to have an economy of consequence, you want a chance at prosperity and peace, then you better make a deal with us and forget about the Americans. So sowing doubt and confusion is a net plus for Beijing, even if they don't take the ultimate aggressive action.
All right, finally, obviously I've been loudly against lockdowns here from the beginning. We see the economic chaos, destruction they've caused now. But China is still doing the lockdown thing, including some of their most important cities. Is that somehow playing a role in this? Because their economy has to be hurting at this point in time.
I firmly believe their economy is hurting much more than is reported. I mean, there's always been a truism in analyzing China that their statistics lie more than average statistics lie. And so their economy is in contraction, I would estimate. Politically, there's going to be massive pushback in the major cities like Shanghai and some others that have experienced these extreme lockdowns for 2 months now in some places. And so this uncertainty within China can cut both ways. It can make Xi Jinping a very risky leader who wants to have a fight externally so that he can wrap himself with the flag and have people willing to sacrifice for their country, or it can make it so that people have finally fed up with their leader, and that pushback actually makes us safer as they have to take care of their own situation domestically.
Yeah. Stephen Yates, thank you so much. I appreciate you giving us some time.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jesse.
All right. We got light in the mood. Next. Isn't graduation from college a beautiful thing? I mean, not that I would know, but I'm assuming everyone who's graduated enjoyed the process. But I've always wondered why some people didn't enjoy it more. You know what? This guy, he doesn't have that problem.
Yes! Antonio Miguel Solorosa.
I love it how he eats it and gets up and raises his fists up like he just conquered something. Love it. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright,
a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.